Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hour number two of our radio program. Welcome back in. Zach Yelp Show on CBS Sports Radio across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM Channel 206, and also the radio.com application. And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. These are challenging times, and Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is there with you. It's an honor to welcome to the Zach Yelp Show right now the Basketball Hall of Famer. Did win a national championship as the head coach of Maryland back in the 2001-2002 season. And that's Gary Williams here with us on the Zach Yelp Show. Coach, thanks for a few minutes. How are you and the family holding up?
We're doing okay, Zach. I appreciate you saying that. And, you know, we're hanging in here like everybody else. We're holed up in our house, just trying to stay as busy as possible.
What have been the activities that you're doing inside your home, Coach?
Watching a lot of games from previous years and then some movies, you know, a couple TV shows and reading a lot. You get a lot of books over the years, and it's a chance to read some books. And I try to get out and walk every day. I think that's important that you do something, you know, just to get out of the house. So walking's good.
We'll relive your team that did win it all, the 2002 team, in just a few minutes as we're talking to the Hall of Famer in Gary Williams. But let me take you back to a few weeks ago when we found out that the conference tournaments were getting canceled, and then eventually the big news did drop that the NCAA tournament was getting canceled as well. How do you recall that hectic two-day period where there was a lot of unfortunate moments going on in our country?
Well, it was something we've never seen in terms of sports before. Once the NBA decided to not play, then I think that kind of forced the hand of everyone else to follow suit. And, you know, understandably, you know, the way things worked out, that was definitely the right decision. You know, when something happens for the first time, and there's not many things that can happen for the first time as you get older, but this is different. This is something that there's no game plan. Nobody's figured this out. Like, well, this is what happens when this takes place. It's one of those things you're playing by ear, and you know you're going from here. And so, for the seniors and you know, for the teams that were really good this year that had a chance in the NCAA tournament, for example, it's really a shame because a lot of times, even if you're underclassmen, you never get a chance to go back. It's so hard to get to the Final Four. I coached a long time before I ever got to the Final Four, and it's just the way it goes. Even though you have a good team, it's not going to happen every year. And you just feel sorry for those teams that may have had the chance to do that this year.
You know, the bond between players and coaches in college is very strong, and it has a family bond to it. What would you say to especially your seniors in a spot like that?
Well, I always talk to the players about, you know, and for a while there you had guys for 4 years, and then that changed, obviously. But you always talk to them about don't make this to be the highlight of your life. You know, this is something you're going to remember the rest of your life, but don't make it be the best thing. Make it be, you know, your kids when you have kids or your job, you know, once you get out of college, that type of thing. And we used to hammer on that. And so I think for a player, that's easy for me to say. But at the same time, as a senior in college and you're getting, you know, you're good enough to play in the NCAA tournament, you're going to can't wait to see where you go in a tournament, things like that. It's really hard. And people, I mean, when you put that much time into anything, not just basketball or whatever, it takes time. You know, time's the only way. You know, you drift away from it a little bit, and it kind of gets down the road, and that's the only way it's going to be something that players can handle.
Do you think the players that didn't get to go to the postseason, and we know winter athletes are not going to get that extra year of eligibility, the seniors, do you think that was the right decision by the NCAA, or were you pulling for the seniors to get that extra year?
Well, everybody got to play their whole season for the winter sports, at least in terms of basketball. So, you know, I kind of understand the NCAA's decision, and, you know, you applaud them for giving the spring athletes that opportunity to participate another year. But as we see, as you get away from that decision, there's a lot of problems with that. There's a lot of things scholarship-wise. Most of the spring sports don't make money. You know, who's going to pay for that? How about the guys you already recruited? How are they going to look at that now that these guys are coming back? And so there's a lot of questions that have to be dealt with. But I still think it's a good idea that they at least have the choice. And, you know, a lot of those kids, they're good students. They have job opportunities coming up. And, you know, they have to make decisions on whether or not to go back to college because they can't pass up a good economic opportunity because they thought they were leaving college.
Talking to the Hall of Famer and Gary Williams on the Zach Gelb Show, former Maryland head coach, still with the university as the senior managing director for alumni relations and athletic development. We talk about good teams that are getting robbed of this opportunity, and we all understand that health and safety comes first, but your Maryland program, the program that you loved, is one of them, because you guys had such a good year this year, especially in a Big Ten that was as loaded as I could ever remember. What are the memories that come back to mind? How do you look back when you're going to remember this team from this past year?
Well, you know, just watching them like everybody else, they certainly were outstanding. You know, to finish in a three-way tie for first place is a great accomplishment this year in the Big Ten, because they had, you know, 7-8 teams ranked all year, and the teams that weren't ranked were still pretty good. So it was a challenge, especially on the road. It was a very difficult road conference, especially early on. And you play 20 games now in the Big Ten. It makes it tougher because, you know, you can't schedule around a tough conference because you're playing so many tough conference games. I think for that team, it's really tough. Obviously, I never had a team that was good enough to go to the NCAA tournament and get a pretty good seed and not be able to play. So those guys and coaches, Mark Turchin, you know, they have to deal with that. And that's one of those things. And right now, there's nothing to take that place, shut down. And so you get a lot of time to think about those things. And that makes it tougher, I think. There was a lot of things going on, graduation. Most schools have canceled graduation. You know, if you are taking classes, it's online. All those things are going on now that are completely different than what you usually get, especially for seniors, getting back to the seniors again. You know, you enjoy that last semester after basketball's over if you're a basketball player. And they won't have that opportunity, and you feel bad for those things.
Mark's been around for a long time, going back to Wichita, Texas A&M, and now this run he's having at Maryland. You know, as a coach like you are, what are the principles, what are the philosophies when you talk to Mark that you really enjoy and like with what he's doing with the program?
Well, he cares. You know, that's the most important thing. He wants his players to be successful. You know, I think all coaches feel that way. And, you know, that's the part you don't see, the part away from basketball where, you know, whatever time a player gets to spend with a coach, you want him to be a better person by the time he leaves that program. And I think Mark is concerned about those things. Plus, you know, he wants to win like everybody else. And when you're in a tough conference, it's a dog-eat-dog thing. You can be friends, you know, with fellow coaches and things like that. But at the same time, those jobs are very competitive and they're so visible now. You know, you have to find a way to get away from it a little bit in a normal situation. And, you know, just to really get your head back on, because once you start, say, September, when the guys come back to school, that's the starting point. But what happens now is a college basketball coach, they go all through the year. They practice in the summertime. I think they're allowed 4 hours a week now to practice in the summertime. So you're constantly responsible for your players, and that becomes very difficult.
Coach, how much do you still miss coaching the game and the daily grind of giving back to kids and all that?
Well, that's the part you miss. You miss preparing for practice. I always thought that was a great thing. If you have a good practice, it's a great feeling walking off the court after practice because you knew you got better. If you had a problem with one of your players, you made sure you got him back in the office the next day so we could be on a pretty good wavelength by the time practice started the next day. And then, of course, game days, when the referee threw the ball up, that was great. There was nothing like coaching those 2 hours, you know, in games, especially big games. But at the same time, it was tough during the day, especially you get a 9 o'clock game or whatever. That's a long time to think about the game and try to get ready for the game. So I miss the locker room, the coaching, the actual basketball stuff, I guess is the best way to put it, because that was fun. That was never a job, that part of the job.
Would you ever rule out maybe making a return one day?
Oh, you know, you never say never, but, you know, I'm old. So, you know, I think most ADs, you know, they look at a program and, you know, we want that young guys. And I understand that completely. But, you know, and it's amazing. Basketball is such a great game because just watching all the old games that are on now with no basketball being played, you see things that you start thinking, oh, man, I could really use that play, you know, that play. We can fit that in the way we try to run things. And then you tell yourself it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter what the play is because you're not ever going to use it again. So, no, I had my run. I coached 44 years. I was a high school coach. And, you know, got to coach at 5 great schools and returned to my alma mater. So all those things were really good. And I feel very fortunate to get the shot that I did.
With you coaching your alma mater in Maryland, some guys say that's a very memorable experience. Other guys say it's tough because that's your school and there's extra pressure that comes with it. Obviously, you had an abundance of success, but, you know, was that a little bit of a difficult situation as well in some ways, coaching your school?
No, I never looked at it that way. I, you know, all I wanted to do was, you know, the reason I came back really was Maryland was struggling a little bit there in 89. And, you know, it was an opportunity to coach in the ACC, and the ACC was the best conference at that time. And that was one thing. And then to coach at your alma mater, hey, I left, you know, 20 years before that, got out of there, and I was going to be a junior varsity coach in New Jersey in high school and really happy to get that opportunity, thinking I'd be a high school coach the rest of my coaching career. But, you know, things change, things work, and to get that opportunity was a great opportunity for me. And you know, I love the idea that we got the program back on track and we got good enough where we can compete at a national level, because those first couple of years we had sanctions from the previous administration and we weren't allowed to play in the NCAA. We weren't allowed to play on live TV, and that really hurt a lot of things. And, you know, it made you work harder, but, you know, you get determined. That helped shape what you are as a coach, and I enjoyed that challenge to get us back to where the University of Maryland belonged.
A few more minutes with the Hall of Famer and Gary Williams. Going back to your national championship team, actually, before we do that, the year before you guys go to the Final Four and you lose to Duke, but what do you remember telling your team? Because only one team wins, and when you get that close, you obviously want to cut down the nets on at the Final Four and then also at the championship game. But what do you remember telling that team that night after you guys lost to Duke?
Well, I congratulate them, first of all, because it was the first Maryland team ever go to a Final Four. So there's a ceiling there. There's no doubt about it. When you get in that NCAA tournament, you think you're good enough, and maybe you are good enough. But if you never won it before, it gets very difficult. And, you know, we had 4 great games against Duke that year. They were the highest-rated games on television. You know, Battier, Jay Williams, guys like that. We had Juan Dixon, Steve Blake, Lonnie Baxter, just tremendous players on both teams. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for Mike Krzyzewski. Obviously, what he's done, he's been the best modern coach in the post-John Wooden era for sure. And, you know, just those games, you know, we lost in the tip-in. We blew a 10-point lead at Maryland. We won on senior night down at Duke, and then they beat us in the Final Four. So all those games are just, you know, some of the best games I was ever involved with. And, you know, I appreciate that opportunity. And I told the players that, too. I said, hey, you guys did something that very few players ever get the chance to do. And, you know, we came close, but, you know, we weren't good enough. I mean, you have to, you know, put it out there. And we had a lot of guys back. I knew that, you know, I wanted to see if they take the challenge to try to get better that summer, you know, so we have a chance to win the thing again in 2002. And, you know, I told them we're going to take 2 weeks off, then we're going to get back in a weight room and do all the, you know, the stuff necessary to get ready. And they were back in a weight room a week after we got back on their own. So I knew then that we had a chance because we were talented. We had four guys go to the NBA off that 2002 team. And, you know, we were really deep and good.
So that team didn't get complacent, obviously, the next year. But when you're trying to get back to that spot, you always wonder when you're reliving last season and trying to make up for it in the next season. Was there ever a moment or two in that year where you had to regroup your team because maybe you thought they were living too much in the last season?
Well, no, we never looked at the tape of that semifinal game against Duke. We just, you know, I thought that would be a waste of time. Plus, I wanted to be really positive. Everything we were doing was about the next year. We couldn't do anything about the game in the semifinals in 2001. So we tried to stay as positive as possible in that situation. You know, we knew we had to get better. We weren't good enough to win it, so we knew we had to get win it. We were close. And so it's a lot of times it's the little things, the execution. It's not about the talent. And, you know, we certainly had enough talent, but there was probably, you know, it was a pretty good year that year. There was probably 10 teams in the country with the type of talent necessary to win the NCAA championship. And we found out our first game. We played, I think it was Coaches versus Cancer in Madison Square Garden. And we played Arizona. Lute Olson, Walton was on that team. I think Gilbert Arenas was still on that team. They had some really good players, and we lost in a good game, but we lost. And if we needed a wake-up call, that was it. You know, we were ranked like third or fourth in the country, and all of a sudden you walk in there and you get beat in Madison Square Garden, and everybody saw us get beat too. That's the one thing with playing those types of games. And so we had to make sure just how tough we really were, and we went from there. We understood what it took to be good, and, you know, if we had any complacency at all, that game took care of that.
When you win the championship in that 2002 season, with your journey, with your team's journey, with all that has transpired, when you're cutting down those nets, what's going through your mind that night when you win it all?
Well, there was a lot of things. I thought about, when you coach JV basketball, a lot of times there's, 30 people in the stands, and all of a sudden we're playing in front of 65,000 down in Atlanta. And I thought about that and thought about how fortunate I was to get a great coach named Tom Davis got me the job at Lafayette College as an assistant basketball coach. And I had to be the head coach of a soccer team in order to get the assistant basketball coaching job, which is a whole nother story. But, you know, it was something that I never thought I'd be able to do. I didn't know how to get into college coaching. I didn't know enough people, but Tom Davis really took care of me, and he did a great job at Boston College, Stanford, Iowa. You know, he was just a tremendous basketball coach.
Wait, so you were coaching soccer at Lafayette?
Oh, yeah. Head men's soccer coach for 6 years. I don't have it anymore, but I had the record for most losses in a season and most wins in a season. But it was great. All those guys, there was no scholarships in soccer then, and all those guys are playing because they love to play. And I was 25, and I had seniors, 22, 23. Wow. And it was pretty the hardest thing I ever did was walk out in the field first day of practice in soccer because I didn't know anything. You know, I didn't know anything about soccer. You know, back then, 72, soccer wasn't what it is today, obviously. So I just told the seniors, I said, look, you guys, I think I can coach it. You know, my technique's not real good here, and I don't know much about this thing, so you guys got to help me. And they like that. You know, they because they love the game. You know, they were playing for the love of the game, and, you know, we had a lot of fun.
That's unbelievable. Such a great story. Last one for the Hall of Famer and Gary Williams. How long did it take to sink in? When you win it all, especially the year before, you go to the Final Four and you lose, and we know what the university accomplished, them going to their first ever Final Four. But when you win it all, do you remember a moment afterwards where you say, wow, that really just happened?
Well, it's so hectic afterwards. You know, you have a lot of media obligations, things like that. You're prepared, or I always tried to be, whether we won or whether we lost. You know, I knew the basics of what I was going to say. But I guess it's when you get up there and you have your seniors usually, or maybe your best players up there for the press conference, and look at those guys. and like you see the looks on their faces, that's when you know. That's when you know something really went well. And like I said, you're a sprained ankle away. You're a game away from a team that comes in and doesn't miss from the three-point line. A lot of things can happen there, and that's why it's so hard to win, you know, the national championship. And that's why, you know, once you do it, especially with the players, I mean, that's the rest of their lives. They have that. Nobody can take it away from them. And, you know, it's just great to see, you know, what that does for them in terms of how they handle the rest of their lives.
After 2011, you know, when you were done coaching at Maryland, did you ever coach a youth league soccer game? Just curious.
No, but I watched soccer. I like, and by the way, University of Maryland has a tremendous soccer program. They've won, I think, three in the last 10 years, something like that. I might be wrong, and gone to many Final Fours. So it's great to see them. And in the games, you know, the games become a worldwide game. It's like basketball going to Europe has been like soccer has come to this country. So it's just a lot of fun, and I enjoy watching it. And, you know, every once in a while I act like an expert when I watch a soccer game. I can tell people what's going on. So,
well, a legendary basketball coach, and depending on the years, maybe a legendary soccer coach too. He's Gary Williams. Gary, can't thank you enough. Good luck to you and your family. Good health as well.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate it. You be safe, okay?
You got it. There's Gary Williams. Awesome, awesome conversation. He was coaching soccer to get a basketball job too. Wow, what a story. For some reason, when he's telling that story, all I could envision is in future years, him being that Mike Ditka kind of role in the movie Kicking and Screaming, where he teams up with Will Ferrell to coach that youth soccer team to, you know, remember when Will Ferrell wants to defeat his dad. I could see one day, he's 75 years old, Gary Williams, but down the road, maybe in the upcoming years, Gary Williams as the youth soccer league coach to get back to those soccer roots. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Always fun to welcome in a legend to the show. And Gary Williams definitely is that. We'll take a timeout. When we come on back, we have a poll question to introduce for you. And it involves four teams in the AFC that didn't make the playoffs a year ago. We'll tell you what the poll question is next.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. The Zach Gelb Show is on the air across the nation on CBS Sports Radio. Here's Zach Gelb.
And CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227. It's sponsored by our good friends at Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. Easy. Great stuff with the legendary basketball coach and Gary Williams joining us coming up in 30 minutes. Former NFL front office executive Mark Ross will join us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio as we'll go through all about the draft and try to figure out how general managers are preparing and other people essential to the drafting process are preparing with everyone's world being rocked right now with the coronavirus. Here's our poll question today, at Zach Gelb on Twitter. Also, could find it at CBS Sports Radio. Between these four AFC teams who didn't make the playoffs last year, who is most likely to make the playoffs in 2020? Here are your four responses. The Cleveland Browns, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Indianapolis Colts, or the Los Angeles Chargers. When I go through these four options, I look at the Chargers. They have talent. When you see the defensive side of the ball with some of those names in James, in Ingram, and obviously Bosa. You look at the offensive side of the ball. They just signed a four-year extension with Austin Ekeler. They said goodbye to Melvin Gordon. You still have Mike Williams in the fold there. You have Keenan Allen as well. Hunter Henry too. You have some names there with that Chargers team. It wasn't that long ago where the Los Angeles Chargers had the same record as the Kansas City Chiefs. They lost that on the division. Then they go win their first playoff game, wild card weekend. That was the game up against the Ravens where Lamar Jackson was not playing well and fans wanted to put Joe Flacco in, but Harbaugh did not do that. Chargers win that game. They go on to play the Patriots at Gillette Stadium. Patriots were the 2 seed that year. Chiefs were the 1. And that was the year the Patriots did go on to win the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 53 against the Rams. But going into the playoffs, a lot of people were down on the Patriots. They didn't have a good end to the regular season. So that was a game many people thought the Chargers were going to win, and the Chargers didn't show up. I was at that game, sitting in the 300 section at Gillette Stadium, right on the 50-40-yard line in the 300 section, which is, to me, one of the best places to watch a football game. Third section, you know, the 300 level, you get to see all the plays develop. You're right on the 50-45-yard line. It's a tremendous seat, and that game was over at halftime. It was over very early, and the Patriots just pummeled the Chargers that day. Beat them up inside the trenches. Brady had all day, open receivers, left and right, bing, bam, boom, going up and down the field, and the Chargers had no answer. And then going back to last year, people were still believing in the Chargers. And I don't blame them. I believed in the Chargers. And that Chargers team had a lot of injuries, and Phillip Rivers looked shot. So when I go to this year, even though the Chargers have some talent, who's playing quarterback for them? If it's Tyrod Taylor, even if there's an extra playoff team added, I don't feel that confident that they're going to be in the playoffs. You go out and sign Cam Newton, I feel a little bit better. But what does Cam have left in the tank with the last two injuries that he suffered with the foot and also the shoulder? So my answer here is not the Chargers. I look at the Colts. They signed Phillip Rivers. I don't love that decision. And I know we love Indy because of Reich and Ballard. They have Quinnen Nelson, Darius Leonard. You still have T.Y. Hilton there. Well, what are their big names, though, for Phillip Rivers to throw the football to? Who are those names when you look at that Colts roster? I don't think there's a lot of big names there. And they have a good offensive line. And you have a good running back, too, in Marlon Mack. So can Phillip Rivers, because you'll be able to run the football, you'll get some time, but can Phillip Rivers really make that big of a difference this year? I don't love his options throwing the football. So that team, I could see them being 8-8. And maybe 8-8 gets you into that 7th spot, but out of these 4 teams, I wouldn't be betting on the Colts. So that leaves me between the Browns and the Steelers. And I look at the Steelers, the defense is tremendous. With Minka Fitzpatrick, you also have T.J. Watt, you have Cam Hayward, Bud Dupree. You have a lot of really good names on that defensive side of the ball for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But what will their identity be offensively? Because I could look at all those names defensively. You know, still have Joe Hayden there, Devin Bush. They have a lot of good names defensively. But offensively, what are they? Will James Conner be able to stay healthy? Can Juju Smith-Schuster stay healthy and be a number one wide receiver? I'm not that confident with the Steelers' offense. And oh yeah, by the way, Big Ben comes back. And am I expecting Big Ben to get back to Hall of Fame form and be great? I don't think so. Now, James Washington was okay last year, good. You know, he could be like that number two wide receiver. I know they like Deontay Johnson too. Probably would not hurt if they had a wide receiver in this draft, and you have a lot of good talent coming off the board. So you got some names there. Not great names, not elite names. I don't think Juju is great. But with what they were able to do last year with Hodges and with Mason Rudolph, you'd have to think those players are going to get a little bit better with Ben, but how much, you know, what is Ben at this stage of his career? And that team was 8-8 last year without a quarterback, really. So that's why you could be encouraged, but it all rides on the health of Big Ben, which I don't have great confidence in. And then I look at the Browns. I see a Browns team. Out of those 4 teams, they're the most talented team that we're talking about when you compare the Browns to the Steelers, Colts, and Chargers. I don't know what Kevin Stefanski is going to be as a head coach. And can the Browns get out of their own way? So for me, it's between the Browns and the Steelers. And usually I'd pick the Steelers here because I trust that organization more. And they have Mike Tomlin too. And Baker's an uncertainty. Ben's an uncertainty. I just think the Browns are a better team. I think the Browns are a better team. Now they got to put it together. So when I pick here, I'll throw the Colts and Chargers out. And when I decide between the Browns and the Steelers, I'll reluctantly take the Browns. And here's the determining factor for me. The determining factor is that I believe Baker will look more like the Baker Mayfield from year one than year two. And for Ben, even though he's a Hall of Famer and he's a legend, I just don't know what he's going to be coming off this injury. And when I see Ben, I know Steelers fans think, oh yeah, he's going to be back, he's going to be good. But when I see photos of Ben, I'm just not encouraged. And I know it's tough to knock someone out of there because we're all not shaving during this coronavirus and they're sitting at a table with their family. But every time I see Ben, he just looks washed up to me. Will his play on the field this year be washed up? That's another question. So Browns, Steelers, Colts, Chargers, between those four teams that didn't make the playoffs a year ago, who's most likely to make the playoffs in 2020? I'm going to hold my nose here and say it's the Cleveland Browns. Early returns right now, 11% say the Chargers, 23% say the Colts, 31% agree with me with the Browns, and then leading the way at 35% are the Pittsburgh Steelers. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio, coming on back.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. He's live. He's nationwide on CBS Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show. Here's your host, Zach Gelb.
So that McDonald's challenge has been a big trend on social media. It's four burgers, but they're double burgers. So it's eight patties, about 30 chicken nuggets, two big orders of French fries, and then four sodas. So myself and Stu were talking about this last night. And we both agreed you have 90 minutes to eat it. If you do so, you get $3,500, which was the challenge. And McAfee did it last night. And I guess he was going to give away $3,500 or donate it to charity if he was able to complete that challenge. So I'm watching McAfee do this last night. And myself and Stuart Kovacs did not think we would be able to do this because we both don't like soda. And you have to drink four big cups of soda. That's not up my alley. So you get 90 minutes to do this. And I'm watching McAfee participate in this last night, and I thought he was going to do this going away. And there was one point up there. Let me go back on my Twitter, because I took a photo and I sent it out, and I was talking with Dan Orlovsky on Twitter about this as well. And I said he's easily going to do it, because there was 45 minutes left on the clock, and he had almost all the food gone. And he had some nuggets left, probably like 10 nuggets left. Maybe a few French fries and another soda, but for a while, it was actually 47 minutes and 18 seconds, and he didn't have that much food left. I'm looking at it right now, about 8-9 nuggets left, one more soda, and then can't be more than 12 French fries. So off that, I thought with 47 minutes to play, Pat McAfee, you can hear on CBS Sports Radio from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern, that he was easily going to be able to do it. And then with about 20 minutes left, because he started talking more, he's doing it on the video feed as well. And with about 20 minutes left, he started to get real sick, where it just hit him. He hit that wall out of nowhere. And he started to alert everyone that he thought he was going to throw up, and he ended up throwing up. And him throwing up, you know when you go to Niagara Falls, you just keep on seeing the water flowing and flowing and flowing. That was McAfee last night throwing up. And then they quickly faded to black once he threw up. And that was the end of the YouTube session. You watched that last night, Stu?
I did. I watched it when I got home. I, like you, I was like, oh, he's got this. He's killing this. And then he just out of nowhere, it was over for him.
So after seeing how quickly it hit him, last night you thought you could not do it. Is there any part of you, let's say you take out the four sodas, what's a drink that you like?
I like lemonade or something like that, iced tea lemonade.
So you put four iced teas or four lemonades, or if you even want to mix it up and go a little Arnold Palmer, do you think that if you take out the soda, because that was the reason why you didn't believe you could do it, would you have been able to complete the McDonald's challenge?
After watching McAfee, I think no. I think it's a lot harder than it looks. I just don't think I could do it.
I really do believe I could eat the burgers easily. When the French fries get cold, though, that's when you're screwed. Because a cold French fry, it's soggy, it's disgusting, it's gross. And I can't imagine a cold chicken nugget tastes that great. The burgers, though, Dave, if you had to rank all these items, take out the soda because we both hate soda. You're going French fries, the nuggets, and the burgers. How do you believe from being the easiest to eat to the toughest to eat, how would you rank those?
I would say burgers the easiest for sure. I'm with you on that. I would say nuggets second, fries third. I think the fries would be the toughest of the three foods.
And the burger's probably the most filling, if we're being fair, because you have the two patties, the cheese, and the buns. But it's enjoyable. Like I could see my – now it's eight patties. That's a lot of patties. But if you go into this with that mentality, I would enjoy eating the burger. So I'm with you. When I think about what you would try to consume first, if you could only go just by food group and you had to – and you couldn't mix around and match and play here – I would say the burgers would be the most enjoyable and the easiest to take down, but they're filling too. Then I would go the nuggets. And then after that, the fries, probably the toughest. Because if you wait on those fries, and maybe you should probably eat the fries, you know, fries first. If you wait on those fries and the fries get cold, it's going to be difficult to eat those French fries. There is no doubt about that. I really did think, though, that Pat McAfee was going to be able to do so, but that wasn't the case. Something else I saw, by the way, yesterday. Antonio Brown worked out with Lamar Jackson and Marquise Hollywood Brown. Now, Marquise Hollywood Brown and Antonio Brown are related, and whenever you see Antonio Brown working out with another football player, now, if it's just Hollywood Brown, okay, you know, they're related, not a big deal, they're cousins. But when you see him work out with Lamar Jackson, that's what's going to create the buzz. League MVP, he's throwing him the football. You already heard Bruce Arians say that they're not going to bring him in. You know AB wants to play with Tom Brady in Tampa, but if you take Arians' word for what it's worth, that's not going to happen. So now in this cycle of AB news, and it's so AB during a coronavirus pandemic where they tell everyone to stay in their house. I know athletes have to train, but to be posting all this on social media, everyone – I don't remember who posted the photo first, but AB put himself in that situation where it's once again an attention moment. Like, look at me. Here I am. Antonio Brown. Everyone's being told to stay inside, and I'm going to not get 6 feet apart from Lamar Jackson and Marquise Hollywood Brown, and we're going to have a workout and then take a group photo together. And that is such an AB moment. Where he's never able to get out of the spotlight. Now, people spin off, hey, it's hard work. You know, I'm working out hard. You know, even though I quit on my team in Pittsburgh and I didn't show up with the Raiders and I acted like a fool with the Patriots. I'm a hard worker. You know, I'm a real hard worker. You don't go late in the draft and get to my spot without putting in hard work. You also got to show up to work. And he didn't show up to work in Pittsburgh and he didn't show up to work with the Oakland Raiders. So when we look at Antonio Brown, and let's obviously push aside right now probably the biggest, just for the sake of the show, probably the biggest thing preventing him from playing in the NFL is we still don't know what the commissioner is going to do from a punitive action standpoint and what the punishment is going to be. But let's say it's an 8-game suspension or even maybe nothing ends up happening to Antonio Brown, which I would be shocked if nothing happens to Antonio Brown. But we wave that magic wand, and Antonio Brown is going to be allowed to play football again, and maybe a few teams are interested. Who are the teams that make sense? Who are the teams that would even contemplate bringing in Antonio Brown? After what AB said about Robert Kraft, it's not the Patriots. He already told Buffalo last year that he wasn't going to play for them. If you're the Jets, do you want to put your young quarterback around that? With him being such a mercurial player now, he's a great player when he's on the field playing, but we haven't seen him being on the field playing as much of late. Miami, it seems like it would be a waste. Baltimore could be one. You could upgrade that wide receiver room if you bring in AB. Pittsburgh, he's not going back to Pittsburgh. We know that. Now, that's not going to happen. It was already been there, done that. Can you imagine, Stu, him in Cleveland? Jarvis, Odell, and AB, it would never happen. Cincinnati, not ready to win, not worth it. Maybe that's how Bill O'Brien tries to win back Deshaun Watson. But if Bill O'Brien had problems with DeAndre Hopkins, who never got in trouble, how would he be able to handle Antonio Brown? So that's probably not likely. I don't think it's going to, you know, maybe Tennessee, you want to get Tannehill another option, but you also think that you're going to pay Derrick Henry, so probably not. And AB, you have to imagine at this point, well, you never know, Alden Smith got a one-year, $4 million contract, but I can't expect anyone, if AB even plays again, which I don't think he will. I said that 1,000 times, but we're just playing the game here. If he does come back, it would only be on a one-year deal. Indy could use a wide receiver. Doesn't seem as if that's a Frank Reich and Chris Ballard move. Jacksonville's not looking to win. How about Kansas City? They've given a lot of players second chances. And if you look at the NFC, Trubisky with the Bears. Wouldn't surprise me if Jerry Jones brought in Antonio Brown. I know Eagles fans would probably be clamoring to get AB too. Saints brought him in for a workout, didn't sign him. It's not going to be Tampa. San Francisco? Would you do that for a year to try to go win a Super Bowl? Seattle? Would you contemplate that as well? Imagine if he goes to Arizona. You get Larry Fitz, Antonio Brown, and DeAndre Hopkins. So I don't think Antonio Brown's going to play. And if I'm running a team, I wouldn't want him on my team. And I even said that when my football team, the football team I root for, the Patriots, you know, I've been very critical of AB. Because he lost his way. You can't control him. He's a ticking time bomb. And I can't trust him. And trust is a huge part of football. And he's a me guy. And he will always be a me guy. And I don't think he'll ever sacrifice for the team. So when I look at AB, I personally wouldn't bring him in. But he's also a heck of a player. He is a great wide receiver. And whenever you have a great player, it's tough to rule out saying never that he'll play again. But on this one, with all that has transpired and with all the ugliness that's occurred and where he doesn't seem invested in football that much, now he'll work out, he'll do things for social media, but that could be misleading. With me questioning how much he loves the game now, and he used to love the game, but I don't know how much that love is authentic anymore. And I think AB is more about the show on Instagram and the show on social media than the show on the field. And for that reason, with me not being able to trust him and with all the things he's been accused of, and just because you're accused doesn't mean you did it, but there's a lot of smoke there, I would not bring an AB. But if the case, maybe it is Baltimore. You got a young quarterback that needs another wide receiver, and you have a heck of a coach in there, an organization that knows to do things the right way, but this would not be the right way.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.